Hi, everyone. Welcome to The Lab Report, a podcast that will show you the inner workings of the clinical lab through discussions, interviews, and stories. Most importantly, you will see what goes on behind the scenes in the clinical lab and how it can impact you.
Welcome back to The Lab Report. I am your host, Victoria Higgins, and today I'll be talking to Dr. Mary Catherine Bond. Dr. Bond received her PhD in laboratory medicine and pathobiology at the University of Toronto with a focus on establishing reference intervals for pediatrics and pregnant women as part of the Canadian Laboratory Initiative on Pediatric Reference Intervals, also known as CALIPER. She is now a clinical biochemistry fellow at the University of Toronto in Toronto, Ontario, and a member of the Canadian Society of Clinical Chemists Working Group on Reference Interval Harmonization. She is joining us today to talk about reference interval harmonization in Canada. So thank you, Dr. Bond, for coming on the podcast today.
Thanks, Dr. Higgins, for having me.
Today, we'll be talking about reference intervals. So these are the normal ranges that appear on laboratory test reports and are used by physicians to determine if a test result might be abnormal. We discussed reference intervals in a previous episode of the Lab Report podcast, and it was titled, How Do I Know If My Results Are Normal? And it was published back in May 2022, if listeners would like to refer back to that episode as well. Could you start us off by describing in more detail what a reference interval is and how they are developed?
Definitely. So as you mentioned, reference intervals are sometimes referred to as a normal range or a reference range. And to make a reference interval, you really need two things. First, a lower limit, where results for a lab test below this limit would be considered abnormally low, and an upper limit, where results for a lab test above this limit would be considered abnormally high. In our field, we define the lower and upper limits as the 2.5th and 97.5th percentiles, respectively, observed for a laboratory test of interest in a reference population. So you may be asking yourself, you know, what is a reference population? And ideally, it's a group of healthy individuals who do not have any medical conditions that would influence this laboratory test of interest. This population should give us an idea of what to expect for a lab result in a healthy group of individuals. This may seem like a really simple concept, but the development of reference intervals is very challenging, but they serve as essential clinical benchmarks to interpret test results. The gold standard approach for reference interval development is called the direct approach, which requires several steps that I'll outline very briefly. First, we must decide on how to define our reference population. So what age ranges are we considering? Is this in pediatrics or adults? Also, what conditions should we exclude from our reference population? This may include chronic health conditions such as heart disease or thyroid disease, acute health conditions like recent viral infection or bacterial infection, and use of prescribed medication like blood pressure medication or lipid-lowering drugs like statins, even birth control. Second, we need to be able to recruit individuals that meet our criteria and collect blood samples from them using the appropriate tube types, volume, transport, and storage conditions. This can be very challenging as guidelines recommend a minimum of 120 individuals to establish a reference interval, and most labs do not have the resources to complete such a study. Once we have our established reference population, we've collected our samples, we then analyze them in the lab for the laboratory test we're interested in using the analytical technologies we have at our fingertips. Once we have the data, we can then establish the reference interval. But first, we really need to look at whether or not we need to stratify by specific factors. For example, should we stratify by sex, age, or other variables such as BMI or body mass index, or even ethnicity? As an example, if we think about testosterone, the testosterone level found in a 5-year-old boy versus a 40-year-old man will be very different in healthy individuals. Therefore, the reference interval should not be the same, and this can increase the number of individuals we need to establish a reference interval a lot. Now, clinical labs sometimes offer more than 400 lab tests, and I think you can appreciate from what I just described that it's challenging for clinical labs to develop their own reference intervals for every single test. And this has resulted in many labs using what vendors or manufacturers recommend or what is published in the scientific literature. And this is valid if they do a quick verification, but often can lead to problems down the line due to historical practices.
So thank you for that very clear and thorough explanation of how reference intervals are developed. So now that we know what reference intervals are and how they're established, can you explain how they're used in laboratory medicine, as well as why they are so important in healthcare?
So when a patient presents to the hospital or a primary care practitioner, more often than not, they'll collect a sample and order a lab test to provide insight as to what could be going on in this patient. And it's actually thought that up to 80% of the data in medical charts comes from the lab. But lab test results, no matter how accurate they are, can be useless without an interpretive recommendation from the lab to alert clinicians when something is abnormal. Now, one example could be thyroid stimulating hormone, or TSH. TSH is measured to assess thyroid function in patients with hypothyroidism or hyperthyroidism. And abnormal values can lead to changes in medication, further up follow testing, or other intervention. A lot of the times, clinicians are just looking for these abnormal flags, so it's really essential that we get the reference interval right. So while reference intervals are very important in medicine, it's really important to highlight that they have a lot of limitations. So first, they're not associated with the risk of a particular medical outcome. They simply describe what should be expected in a healthy population. In contrast, clinical decision limits are threshold values, whereby values above or below are considered diagnostic of a particular condition or associated with a significant risk of a particular outcome. Examples could be HbA1c in the diagnosis of prediabetes and diabetes, as well as low-density lipoprotein cholesterol in assessing cardiovascular risk. Now, it would be great if all laboratory tests had clinical decision limits. However, this is not possible or feasible for two main reasons. One, the establishment of clinical decision limits requires extensive clinical studies, including trials of thousands of participants. And two, many lab tests are used in the assessment of numerous conditions, and we can't have a clinical decision limit for all of them. One additional limitation or challenge of reference intervals is that because they are challenging to establish using gold standard techniques, labs often do not have access to good reference intervals for special populations. This includes pediatrics, pregnancy, and also geriatrics. So labs can be forced to use available reference intervals, even though they may not reflect that population of interest. And Canadian research groups such as CALIPER have really made global advancements to address these gaps, but there's still work that needs to be done.
Today, we're going to specifically discuss harmonization of reference intervals. So can you explain what harmonization is and why it's important to strive for harmonization of reference intervals in particular?
So I think harmonization is an increasingly important component of healthcare towards achieving equity. Essentially, we want to create a healthcare system where, regardless of where the patient goes, they receive standardized and high-quality care. With the integration of hospital networks, multidisciplinary patient care across institutions, and increased accessibility of lab test results directly to patients, there's a significant need for harmonization efforts across the medical spectrum. From a lab medicine perspective, one major gap is harmonization of reference intervals. It's often assumed by patients and healthcare professionals, such as doctors, laboratory technicians, et cetera, that lab test results reported to patient charts are interchangeable regardless of the laboratory. Unfortunately, this is not always the case. A patient can go to one laboratory and be flagged as having an abnormal lab test result, and then walk down the street and go to another laboratory and get the interpretation of a normal lab test result. This causes a lot of confusion for clinicians and also anxiety for patients that can lead to a lack of appropriate follow-up, unnecessary investigations, and even inappropriate resource utilization.
So can reference intervals be harmonized for all laboratory tests, or do certain criteria need to be met for this to be possible?
This is a really important point. Reference interval harmonization is simply not possible for all laboratory tests. Something that patients and other healthcare providers do not recognize is that clinical laboratories use different instruments from different vendors or manufacturers for lab testing. Let's say for TSH, like we spoke about earlier, if I go from one lab to another, they may be using a different method. We have a concept in lab medicine called analytical standardization. And what this essentially means is that ideally for every lab test, results from different labs using different vendor methodologies should be very comparable. It's a simple concept, but is quite challenging to achieve. And unfortunately, laboratory test results from different vendors do not always compare well. This is often the case for hormones and other complex molecules that are difficult to measure in a standardized way, particularly those that rely on immunoassay or antibodies for measurement. When we think about reference intervals, they can really only be harmonized across different methods when they are standardized. For example, if one vendor results are on average 20% higher than the others, using the same reference interval would lead to inappropriate test interpretation. They therefore require their own specific reference interval. Some say we are only at the tip of the iceberg when it comes to analytical standardization, which is true to some extent. It takes significant efforts to achieve this, and it's often a collaboration between not only vendors, but international societies, clinicians, etc. But success stories include hemoglobin A1C and cholesterol, where now results compare extremely well across labs and uniform thresholds can be used. Also, I think it's very positive that ongoing standardization efforts had led to increased comparability for a lot of laboratory tests, and this presents a significant opening for reference interval harmonization.
So now that we understand a little bit more about why harmonizing reference intervals is important, could you touch on what the current state of reference intervals is in Canada?
Definitely. So our working group, the CSEC Working Group on Reference Interval Harmonization, asked this very question through a survey back in 2017. And what we observed was that different laboratories in Canada use very different reference intervals, even labs that use the same vendor or method for a particular test. This speaks to the fact that we can't solely explain the variation we see across reference intervals in different labs by the different instruments or manufacturers. This is likely more so due to implementation of reference intervals from different sources over time and even historical practice. As a patient, you can imagine that you don't always go to the same lab to do your blood work. Maybe one day you go to a nearby hospital because you have an appointment, but then you do the follow-up testing at a community site closer to home. This is often the case for patients with long-term health conditions, and we really want to make sure that regardless of where a patient goes, they should get the same answer as to whether their test is abnormal. And based on our findings from this survey, this is not the case for many common laboratory tests.
So how is the CSEC Working Group on Reference Interval Harmonization working to address this problem?
The main goal of our working group, which was established by Dr. Khosrow Wadeli and Dr. Christine Collier, is to establish evidence-based harmonized reference intervals for key laboratory tests and then to support their implementation in labs across Canada. We're a group of over 20 clinical chemists with representation from all over Canada, each contributing a unique and very valid perspective. And we've applied several approaches to try and reach this goal.
What work has the working group done so far to achieve reference interval harmonization?
Our group has been very active over the last few years. We recently published a paper in Clinical Chemistry, a leading journal in our field, this summer, which is the culmination of a lot of work by our members. Essentially, we designed a unique strategy that aimed to ask two key questions. One, what laboratory tests can have harmonized reference intervals? And two, for those tests, how can we establish and recommend a harmonized reference interval? We hear a lot about the use of big data in healthcare and other fields. It's a hot topic, one may say. And this is an example of a project that really harnessed the data we had at our fingertips to address an important gap in our clinical service. So very briefly, we collaborated with a lot of community labs to extract data for many lab tests across three major Canadian provinces, British Columbia, Alberta, and Ontario. Then we applied a unique statistical approach to assess differences between these provincial data sets and asked the question whether or not we could harmonize reference intervals for these lab tests. This is kind of a spin on an indirect approach to reference interval establishment, which is becoming more popular in the next few years. And what we found was that despite the fact that these data were very diverse in terms of their population, so three different provinces, and also the vendors or instruments that these labs used, they produced very similar reference intervals, which supports harmonization in all but a few cases. And we took it a step further to confirm our findings, and we collected samples from healthy individuals in Toronto and Edmonton and checked our established harmonized reference intervals across nine different Canadian labs from the West Coast to the East Coast using different vendors to ensure their validity. Now we're working on writing a guideline with our findings and creating resources to help interested laboratories implement our recommendations.
So it is evident that the working group has been very productive and has made important strides toward achieving reference interval harmonization. So what are the next steps for this working group?
I think the next steps for this working group would, one, to support the implementation of our current recommendations, which will require a lot of consultation, not only with other laboratory professionals, but also with clinicians and maybe even patients. As well, we want to develop more recommendations regarding harmonized reference intervals for other laboratory tests that could benefit from this type of approach, and even work with manufacturers to support analytical standardization for those tests that are still lacking.
So I hope from this podcast episode, our listeners are now able to understand how reference intervals are developed, their current state in Canada, and what the CSCC Working Group is doing to help achieve nationwide reference interval harmonization. So thank you so much, Dr. Bond, for taking the time to talk to me today about harmonizing reference intervals in Canada.
So thank you all for listening to this episode of The Lab Report. So please let us know what you think by leaving us a review on iTunes, and you can email us any questions you have at epoc or epocc@cscc.ca. See you in the next episode.